Our subtitle for the series, An Honest Conversation with God. And we have peered into Habakkuk's honest conversation with God and his questions, which has elicited our own, hopefully, honest conversation with God and our questions. And part of that conversation and questions for both Habakkuk and likely for us is, how can God be both loving and just at the same time? In other words, how do God's love and wrath, his justice and mercy, coexist, or can they even coexist together? And so before we leave Habakkuk for good, and I promise this is the last message, we will let go of Habakkuk. But I want to address this one Habakkuk hang-up. This is a suggestion somebody gave for a title to call it Habakkuk hang-up. So well done. I used it. And it's about the tension between God's love and God's justice, God's wrath and mercy. So I figured I'd just end with a really easy topic to finish it all up. But the inspiration for this was a verse we sort of skimmed over and that I said we would come back to in Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 2, where he says, Lord, I've heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. Repeat them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. There's quite a bit of wrath in Habakkuk. You can't avoid it. But what does it mean to remember mercy in the midst of wrath? And how do we navigate God's wrath? Is it something we should just ignore? Say, that's kind of like Old Testament stuff. Should we be embarrassed by it? So I want to explore together how God's wrath or justice is an action, not an emotion, is an aspect of his love and is a temporary response rather than a permanent attribute of God's character. But let's begin with the idea that God's wrath is an action, not an emotion. This is so important because where we have trouble with scriptures, maybe descriptions about God's wrath, is when we view it as God's sort of uncontrollable emotional outburst that God has, but that's actually not the context that it's ever described in. In her important work entitled The Crucifixion, which I'll be using a bit throughout this morning, Fleming Rutledge says that the wrath of God is not an emotion, it is God's righteous activity in setting right what is wrong. And she continues and says, the wrath of God is not an emotion that flares up from time to time, as though God has temper tantrums. It is a way of describing his absolute enmity, meaning hatred, against all wrong, and his coming to set matters right. The only way to truly have a loving God is also to have a God who is therefore also affected by the actions of his people and takes action because of it. So let me try to give an analogy here, which of course will be imperfect and fall short, but that I'll try to carry through to the other points. And a lot of parents will be able to relate here. Every kid goes through a stage, usually between ages 2 to 4, before they can kind of fully grasp danger, and I'm going through it for the fourth time right now, where they will just take off running into a busy street or through a parking lot. As soon as like you open the car door, they just kind of bolt and take off and run down the road. How many of you have been there? Anybody? A few of you. Okay. Maybe when they're a little older, it's, you know, taking their bike, and despite you telling them 100 times to stop at a stop sign, you just watch them breeze through the intersection. It's absolutely horrifying, right? They put themselves in incredible danger. Are we angry at them when they refuse to listen? Of course. Out of love and compassion, because they are putting themselves in harm's way, right? It is a justified anger. But are we just angry at a distance? Is it just our passive emotions at the moment? If one of my kids runs out into a busy street, do I just stand from a distance and yell, I'm so mad at you for doing that? Why don't you listen to me as I just stand there and let them run? No, my anger toward their action leads me to action as I run toward them with everything in my being to pull them back and save them, saying, you know, you have to listen to me. This is very important. Am I angry at my kid for running into the street? Yeah, justifiably so. Would a punishment for not listening that teaches them how serious their actions are be justified? Probably. That teaches them that this is literally a matter of life and death, right? What drives that anger or potential punishment is just simply love and care for their well-being. God is only angry with his people because he loves them and cares for their well-being. Therefore, second point, God's wrath and justice as an action is really just an aspect of God's love. God's anger flows out of love, is a consequence of his love. He's trying to keep people from the harm that their disobedience causes, even if they can't see it. The same way that a young child can't fully understand or comprehend the consequences of running into the street, so God does what he needs to do to get people's attention. So his anger is flowing out of love. I mean, would it be loving for me to say, I just love my kids so much. No matter what they do, I could never get angry with them. I just want them to be happy and make their own choices. And so I'll just stand here, loving away, as they run into the street, letting them know how much I love them while they step out into the road toward destruction. Is that actually love? The main cause of God's wrath in the Old Testament is Israel breaking the covenant relationship, which leads to all kinds of problems and a complete breakdown in society and relationships and in their worship. And God's motivation is love to draw them back into right practices and right relationship. And in Habakkuk, God is angry because Judah is destroying itself and others through sinful and harmful actions, and it breaks his heart. A non-angry God at sin is a non-interested, indifferent God. And personally, I don't want that. I don't think we want that. So can I give a little bit of a tough critique here? It's mostly people in affluent countries like ours and people with kind of quote-unquote good lives that are uncomfortable with God's wrath and justice being a part of his character because we're mostly sort of out of touch with the rest of the world. And people in oppressed situations and nations who experience injustice on such a regular and daily basis have way less of a problem with an idea of a God angered by injustice and unrighteousness and wrathful because of it. In fact, it's a comfort to them because they understand that it's a justified anger at injustice and wrong. But the reason we sometimes have trouble with God's anger as described in Scripture is that we compare it to our own human anger, which is not usually justified, right? I get angry because I said no mayo on my hamburger, and they put mayo on it. That's not injustice, right? That's not how God's anger works. And this is an important point, that God's anger is almost always on behalf of others, not himself. Others who have no privilege and who have been wronged by sin. God hates sin because sin hurts people and hurts God's creation. And personally, I don't want to worship a God who turns a blind eye toward injustice. But all this comes with a bit of a caveat, our third point, which is that God's wrath or justice is a temporary or secondary response. It's not actually a permanent attribute of God's character. And again, this is a big difference between human wrath and divine wrath. In other words, God's love is absolutely always primary. It's what comes first. It is who God is, what drives God. Anger is only secondary, as we said, driven by love. Whereas the love of God is a permanent, unchanging part of his character and emotion, his wrath is a secondary action that only exists when it has to. And back to my analogy, right? My primary disposition toward my kids is love. I don't wake up with anger toward them in my heart. That's not my main emotion, right? My anger is only a secondary action provoked when maybe justified or necessary based on my love, care, and concern for them, when they are in danger. And God's wrath is not a permanent part of God's being or God's character. It will not exist forever. It is only temporarily provoked when justified out of his concern for us and for others. Here's what D.A. Carson says, that where there is no sin, well, there is no wrath, but there will always be love in God. That will go on forever. One day, all that is evil and that distorts God's good creation and plans will be removed, and therefore there will be no need for his anger and wrath to exist anymore. God will be all in all, and the whole world and his being will be completely wrapped in love. I think this is what Habakkuk was getting at when he says, in wrath, remember mercy. Meaning, God, I know you're angry with our nation right now, is what Habakkuk's saying, and all the wrong that we've done, but remember that beyond that, your primary disposition toward us is love and mercy. And he's just reminding God of his character. Psalm 30, verse 5 says it this way, that God's anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. God displays his judgment and has his prophets, such as Habakkuk, preach judgment, not because it's what he wants to talk about. He doesn't. God delights in mercy, but he simply is provoked to justice because people are being wronged and something has to change. And ultimately, something does change, and something did change everything, because he can't discuss God's wrath and love, his justice and mercy, without understanding the way that justice and mercy culminate at the cross. God's love is permanent. His wrath is temporal. God's love always triumphs and overpowers his judgments. And that is seen nowhere better than at the cross. For all the wrath of God in the Old Testament, as we've seen in Habakkuk, mostly aimed at the powerful, the wealthy, those who oppress the poor, but no one could ever have imagined or predicted that God's eventual solution would ultimately be God himself becoming oppressed, becoming poor, experiencing injustice for himself, being robbed of his dignity for no reason, and then taking on all the wrath of God despite being the wrongs and not the wrongdoer. God absorbed the wrath that everyone else ever deserved, including me and you, and took it upon himself at the cross. And in that moment of wrath, remembered or mixed in mercy. The cross is where God's love and wrath fully meet and kiss, if you will, in one beautiful, indescribable, scandalous act that displays simultaneously both the full wrath and mercy of God. Dr. Edwin Gunger says it so beautifully like this, that the cross is the only place in the cosmos where justice and mercy don't compete, meaning they're not at odds with each other. They converge. God does not set aside justice to make room for mercy. Rather, mercy gets expressed through justice. And that could only happen at the cross and through an event like the cross. God's forgiveness is not one that denies justice, but rather justice and mercy collide simultaneously at the cross in an event that changes everything and all of history and hopefully our lives. And it is that event that we remember and celebrate and enter into with our whole being at this communion table. So let's prepare our hearts and remember God's love expressed through his broken body and spilt blood as we get ready to come to this communion table.